이청수 이영표에게 문전으로 올릴 필요가 그렇죠. 올린다. 안정환 헤딩! 골! 한국이 한국을 지켰습니다.
It is 2002. Ang Jong-won and South Korea have just knocked Italy out of the World Cup. And while Gus Hiddink fist pumps in Taiwan, in Italy, a man who looks like he's fresh from a Benny Hill chase sequence makes an announcement. Ang's goal, he says, was an offence to the country which 2 years ago had openly welcomed him, taught him football, and as a result, he'd be firing the Korean from his club Perugia. It wasn't, they hadn't, and of course he didn't. But the world had finally met a man Italy had been marvelling at for years, big Luciano Gauci. It's a big hello to Gabriele Marcotti.
Hello.
And James Horncastle.
Good day.
Later on, we're going to be talking to you about the big games this weekend, because there are some in Serie A. And also, all the exciting things that happened last weekend, less about the midweek round, because it hasn't happened yet. But I want to begin with the extraordinary man, a man you can hear right now roundly telling another club owner to take it up the arse. A man who dined at the White House, a man who hired a Gaddafi, a man who gave a referee a racehorse, oops, who generally, Gabriele, makes Massimo Cellino look like who? Daniel Levy?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary whenever I tell myself, oh my God, why do we have these like horrendous, you know, Ferrero characters like this? And then I think to myself, wow, like back in the day, we had Gauci.
I think if you were to make like a Frankenstein's monster of bad owners, where you put a bit of Campidelli here, a bit of Ferrero, a bit of Zamperini, a bit of Cellino, a bit of Girardi, the monster would resemble Luciano Gauci.
I mean, there's so many things. We'll go through our favourite Gauci stories. There are legion. But his rise, first of all, is really intriguing. He's a former bus driver who starts a cleaning company, calls it La Milanese because he thinks people are going to think it's more efficient if it's from Milan.
Because he was based in Rome.
And then basically at some point becomes best friends, in his words, with probably the most important best friend to have in early 90s Italy, and that's Giulio Andreotti.
Yeah, and again, for those who don't know, Giulio Andreotti was this...
Sorry. A man numerous trials for association.
He had numerous trials for dubious associations. He's passed now. But it's a figure that maybe could have really only existed at its height in Italy because he's somebody who's very big on being the power broker behind the scenes. You know, the guy who ultimately would bring people together and get things done in sort of a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type way. This bizarre ultra-Catholic figure who sort of heard mass every day.
But also was on trial repeatedly for being essentially the mafia's representative in government.
You should watch Il Divo. Yeah. Sorrentino's film, which is a character study of Andreotti.
He would disagree with it, but I think certainly that's the way a lot of people saw him.
How he and Gauci became friends, possibly bonded by a mutual love of Roma, I'm not sure. That's one of the mysteries, but certainly Andreotti does seem to have unlocked the doors of finance to Gauci, who essentially amasses enough money through his cleaning company to buy a football club.
And a horse. Let's not forget the
horse. The horse.
Tony Binn.
Right.
He made a ton of money off the horse, though.
Exactly,
That's the thing. I mean, this horse, Tony Binn...
It wins the Arc de Triomphe.
Yeah, he made an absolute killing off this. And from what I'm told, he wasn't a great expert on horses.
No.
It was just sheer dumb luck.
Yeah, he bumped into a guy in the street, struck up a chat, and it was like this guy was dealing in horses. He was like, oh, I'll take a punt on that.
Right.
And ends
the
up...
man was dealing horse in the street.
Exactly. Yeah. Incidentally, Ancelotti just bought a horse called Black Mirror for about 75 grand. Yeah.
So. Nice.
You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
Gauci with Tony Binn and the money he makes from the sale of this horse once it's won the Arc de Triomphe and all sorts of other things becomes significantly rich, lives in a castle and buys Perugia. And this is where the fun begins and this is where his relevance to our story really begins. 1991 to 1999, he goes through 15 managers, among them such greats as Giovanni Galleoni, Cersei Cosme, of course. Nevio Scala was there.
Galeone ended up in hospital because of Gaucci. In that, I think he had a heart attack, and one of Gaucci's former managers, Falton Avellino, went to see him and came out, gave a kind of brief press conference saying that Galeone was in there because of stress caused by working under Gaucci. Managers lived in kind of fear of him, or just was like, this guy's a complete and utter joke. And players, again, were just like always being sent into ritiro, so like right. a punitive training camp where they couldn't leave the training ground just because of the whims of Gaucci.
One of his kids was a boxer, of course, and the other one was a fool. One of them was just so...
So Ricardo and Alessandro, who were part of the whole collapse of Perugia, but did time for it while Gaucci basically went to live in Santo Domingo and only returned 4 years later once he'd received a pardon.
Like nothing was ever straightforward with Perugia. If you remember, was it 97, 98? They were in the second division, were in Serie B, and they got to a playoff against Torino with... Our friend Tony Dorigo ended up missing a penalty, if I recall.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
And so what happens with the Gaucci team? Naturally, there's like a massive, massive brawl in the dressing rooms, which, you know, again, in those situations, you don't quite know who started it, who didn't start it. But from that point onwards, Gaucci, even after they told him, I'm like, okay, no more talking about this, there's an investigation. On a daily basis, he and three or four of his friends in the media were continuously accusing Torino of all sorts of things, thereby possibly prejudicing the outcome.
Well, you know, it's really we should talk to Tony Dorigo sometime about that game because he's got some very interesting memories, not entirely unconnected with Gauchi's suggestions there. It was possibly because of dumb luck or possibly because of some skilled people that he hired. It was actually a spectacularly entertaining club, Perugia, for most of its time in Serie A. I had a very eclectic roll call of players. Marco Materazzi, Gennaro Gattuso, Massimiliano Allegri was there as well. Yeah.
Fabio Grosso as well.
Yeah, and I should say too, like, while we'll be spending much of this podcast mocking Gaucci, and while Gaucci would probably take credit for it, even though he probably shouldn't, the number of players that they signed from lower division clubs or obscurity, who then turned out to be very good players. Obviously, Hidetoshi Nakata, when like people thought, oh, no Japanese guy could ever make it in Europe. And then, you know, he became a real phenomenon. To Milan Rapaic, you know, you mentioned Materazzi there. Materazzi was finished at a very young age in football, you know, and they totally relaunched him. Then he went on to win the Champions League and the World Cup, of course. For some reason, they got all these guys in, and when they came to Perugia, they performed exceptionally well. Some of them went on to great things elsewhere, others less so. Mm. But it was this amazing sort of miracle that kind of renewed itself every year where you'd get these waifs and strays in.
The club which had been down in, what was it, Serie C when he picked them up.
Yeah, and didn't they get promoted from Serie C?
In 92-93, only to have it revoked because?
Because the referee's brother might have been given a horse.
No, I think it was the referee himself.
Yeah, well, initially it was like, oh, my brother bought a horse off him. But it then transpired that it was a gift.
Right. This official had been in charge of two Perugia matches in their promotion campaign.
And what was the ref called? Something like Senzacqua, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
But Bellalina.
But they were, you know, they eventually did get up. They had famous victories there at the Renato Curi, and they even won the Intertoto Cup, most prestigiously of all, and got into the UEFA Cup. I think got three rounds into the UEFA Cup.
I interviewed Cesare Cosmi about 5 years ago about his time at Perugia, and he was saying that after like a big win, Gaucci would give him like a massive truffle. You know, those huge truffles that
like
you find.
The ones that pigs find.
Yeah, which would be worth like tens and tens of thousands of euros, which was so big. He told me that he put it in the back of his car, and the suspension of the car just went like that. But yeah, Cosmi, part-time DJ, part-time coach these days.
Cesare Cosmi, again, for those who don't know, is a man who I believe you once shared a pizza with.
That's true.
He's this absurd, horrendous, gravelly voice. He's this weirdo who was so self-conscious. He had a bit of the Tony Pulis about him, in the sense he'd always wear that
always
stupid hat. He'd always, because he was follically challenged.
Right.
Pulis occasionally takes the hat off. Mm-hmm. I don't know that Cosmi...
Yeah, he's got a collection of thousands.
Cosmi ever did. He got into serious trouble 1 year when he was a guest on some TV program, and sort of off-air with a hot mic, he started just talking about how, like, this was rigged and that was rigged. And I mean, these characters, I don't understand what the hell, like,
yeah,
it's grotesque.
I mean, two threads to pull on this. Like, Cosmi also is famous for showing his players porn, essentially, on nights away from home in the hotel, taking them to strip clubs as well. And the other thread is Gaucci, of course, for all his sins, blew the lid off the GAS scandal, you know, with all the agents and, you know, how basically everyone was
Miccoli,
controlled by,
we should mention,
right,
the legendary Miccoli, the man with a giant Che Guevara tattoo.
They also famously beat Juventus and cost them a title.
Yeah, last game of the season, they have nothing to play for. It's one of those games where, like, you know, people like to bet on football. Like, kind of, I have a joke, like, ha, 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 like, I'm sure they'll pull up a fight. And Juventus needed a draw. And there's a universal downpour. The heavens open. You were there, James.
Yeah, I was there.
You remember? I like to imagine you with one of those, like, big ponchos on.
We had to shut down. We were doing the Channel 4 show. We had to shut it down because the wind was just blowing in horizontally into all the equipment.
So Collina decides to, Pierluigi Collina happened to be the referee, and he decides to say, all right, well, let's go and let's wait. Rather than calling off the game, he waited for the downpour to abate, and then they play the game.
Then they played, and Perugia, in a kind of quagmire, basically, it wasn't really a practicable surface, but Collina played on, incurring all sorts of suspicions, and Juve lost, and Lazio, who had already wrapped their game up down in Rome...
Against Regina.
Stood waiting with their radiolini at the ear to hear what the result was from Perugia, and then found themselves...
Well, champions for the first time since 74.
And Eriksson got the England job, and you know, all because of Luciano Gaucci.
And then, young listeners, back then, you couldn't watch games on your phones.
No.
That seems so... The term James has used, radioline, means little transistor radios. Do you think our listeners know what... Our younger listeners know what radio is?
I don't know.
But anyway, it's sort of like... Radio is sort of like a podcast, but you don't actually download it from the internet. Anyway. The guy who scored the goal that day was a defender named Alessandro Calori.
Calori.
Who's sort of like a big horse of a defender. His last name actually means heat. And 3 or 4 years later, because we're a wonderfully Catholic country and the Pope lives in our country, the biggest selling magazine in Italy by far is called Famiglia Cristiana, Christian Family. And do you remember this story? So they get a letter, an anonymous letter from somebody who signs himself AC, who goes and he complains about matrixing and pressures and being forced to do things he didn't want to do. And they've never revealed who it is. They didn't even ever reveal whether they just made up those initials or whether those were his actual initials. I mean, it is called Famiglia Cristiana, so we assume they didn't just make the whole thing up, right? Because
it's God's will.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously the fact that somebody named AC then created all this whole sort of... I remember it just went on for the whole summer and Maggi complaining and Juve complaining. What did you do against your will? You scored a goal in a game.
Okay, let's have our favourite Gaucci stories, because there's so many. You could have the suspension that he received for 3 years for giving the referee a racehorse, the time he tried to sign a woman to his Perugia men's team.
Birgit Prinz.
Indeed.
Not just any woman.
Yeah, the hero best in the of world. The of Germany's World Cup winning.
She was Marta before Marta, basically.
Yeah. Right. She is very beautiful and has a great figure. I can assure you that as a player she's very good, said the progressive Luciano.
You can't stop me from playing her in my men's team. There is no rules to forbid this.
Right. Yeah. But she, I think, just thought, no, I don't need any of this. He did manage to sign Gaddafi's son.
Yeah, Sadi Gaddafi, he... And by the way, before we all laugh at him, let's not forget that Gaddafi also went on to play for another club in Italy.
Udinese.
Who loved to pretend that it never happened.
Yeah.
So, under Roy Hodgson.
The whole sort of grotesque thing there, and you can draw your own conclusions about Sadi Gaddafi. Two quick memories associated with this. One was Paolo Di Canio at the time was here in England, and he used to guest on this evening show on, I don't know if it was either Domenica Sportiva or Pressing or whatever, on Italian television. And they had Sadi Gaddafi in the studio together with his servant, you know, they're like, they're interviewing him. He's talking about how excited he is. He's describing himself as a player. He's like, well, you know, I'm a number 10 in between Maradona and Platini and so on.
I've been training with Ben Johnson.
And they show a highlight video of this guy from the Libyan League. And the highlight video, which I think you can still find it on YouTube somewhere, is really grotesque because it really is like, you know, him running slowly with the ball and people kind of falling out of the way and, like, you know, the goalkeeper dropping it. But obviously he's a guest on the show, and a lot of Italian hosts, they like to sort of suck up a little to important people. I can't imagine why. So after it, like, you know, the host, like, sort of applauds and says, wow, wow, we can see, like, you know, you're not just an important leader. You clearly have the technical skills, you know, you're going to entertain Perugia. And then Paolo pipes up from the safety of London. I need to make clear. And he's like, come on, what do you guys say? Look at those people. Like, he's like, sono birilli, meaning like they're like
ten pin bowling.
They're bowling pins. He's like, come on, all these guys, like, come on, Sonny, man. If they hadn't let you score, like, you know, you would have cut off their hands, or maybe they're. And then all of a sudden, like, the connection goes down.
He was, though, I think a shareholder in Juventus, wasn't he?
Tamoil. Mm. Was it the state oil company?
No, it was Lafico, wasn't it? The Libyan investment fund.
Okay. But they famously sponsored Juve's shirts, Tamoil, which was the Libyan oil company. I think they had a 7% stake in
Juve. And the only time he actually made it on the field for Perugia was in a game against Juventus. He didn't actually, I don't think, play a minute in Serie A, but still managed to get suspended for nandrolone without having come off the bench, which is amazing.
So if you've ever been to Perugia, basically the town's like sort of perched up on this hill. I mean, it's gorgeous countryside. And there's a hotel at the top called the Hotel Brufani, and it's kind of the only sort of nice hotel high-end hotel in Perugia. And he basically took over the top two floors of that hotel, and he brought all his people there. And in the mornings, because like in a lot of old medieval cities, you know, there's nowhere to park, the hotel actually has an underground car park, but albeit one that is like incredibly tight. So he used to drive his Lamborghini to training together with his security detail, which is like basically two vans of armed men, one before and one behind. But sort of the road down is so tight and just the parking, and basically every day he would ding it and then they would send it to get to the body shop. Legend has it is that actually there were actually three Lamborghinis, and sort of on a rotational basis, they would, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but you know, with Saudi, everything is plausible. I should also stress one other thing. While we laugh and joke about what a freak show this is, he's also a very, very bad man who did very, very bad things, you know, in his day job after football. So let's bear that in mind.
Sadi Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for
I mean,
sure.
Other hotel Gaddafi anecdotes when he was at Udinese. I can't remember. I can't remember. It was the maitre d' or the head of the hotel later told all these stories about him where they would never have any milk in the morning for cappuccinos or anything like that because Lady Gaddafi liked to have a bath
in milk. Thank goodness it was milk. So, all right. Well, returning to the subject then of Gaucci, Sadio Gaddafi, not his only unusual appointment. I mean, again, progressively, he appointed, I think, Italy's first woman coach, no? Carolina Moracci at Viterbese, and then fired her again kind of days later. But he at least had made the step in that direction.
She's now back in coaching, working for AC Milan's women's team.
I spoke to her about this, and so Gaucci decided, as you do back then, to go and buy a club in another division, which is something that...
Well, how many clubs did he have?
Catania. He was vice president of Rome at some stage.
Right.
He had Ancona, but claimed he didn't know he had Ancona. And Viterbese.
So, with Carolina Moracci, it was the weirdest thing because she was, as far as I know, she was the first woman coach to coach a men's team. Mm. Since then, obviously, you had the case in
France.
Two cases in France, I think. He'd come and, like, you know, he'd give her all sorts of advice and stuff, but she's like, I was ready for that because it had happened before. You know, when you coach a woman's team, you know, it's not a man or woman thing. It's like, this is what Italian presidents are like. I knew that's what he was like. But he decided during training camp, she had the fitness coach, Gaucci, realized that, because she said on the first day, that he didn't like him. Like, he really didn't like him. And it really bothered him. And it was a man, incidentally. Like, and ultimately, she lost her job because he'd come in and like basically every day he'd be like, all right, you need to fire him. He's like, why? Like, I don't like him. Like, no, he's part of my team. And the next day, you need to fire him. Why? Like, I still don't like him. I hate him even more. And then eventually he's like, either you fire him or I fire you. And she said, go ahead.
She took the fall.
I dare you. And yeah.
One man, Gouge, certainly did like George Bush. He had banners placed at games at both Perugia and Viterbese saying George Bush for president. And so touched was George Bush that he sent him a letter thanking him and invited him to... Gouge went to dinner at the White House with, I think, the head of the Supreme Court and Betty, who was his wife at the time. And Betty was basically a school friend of one of the sons, one of the Gouge sons.
Is this Elisabetta Gregoraci?
Yeah. No. This is...
Because didn't he also have a thing with her before she married...
Briatore.
Possibly. This is Elisabetta Tulliani. So she was, basically went to school with one of Gouge's sons.
Wait,
then,
Tulliani, isn't that the... isn't that the Gianfranco Fini thing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the weird thing. So basically, she gets together with the dad of her school chum, and they live together in this castle. And there's an... If you can stomach it, there's an extraordinary video for Rai Tre of them going around the castle together, kind of pecking each other on the cheek.
Pretending to, like, call her on the phone.
Exactly. He says, would you like to come for a little tour around the castle? So she turns up, and then they have a kiss. And he says to her, troublingly, you know, I could be your father. And she says to him, yes, I could be your daughter. There's a kind of pause. And he says, luckily you're not. And then off they go. And there's various other kind of coy bits around.
He became a dad again at 71, didn't he? And George Bush wasn't the only head of state
that
he met. By the
way, just to clarify, this is George W. Bush retired.
George W. Bush, right, okay.
But
also to clarify, then she basically leaves him, leaves Gouge years later because she's fallen in love or fallen in with Gianfranco Fini,
who at the time was a very prominent Italian politician.
Neo-fascist.
Called himself post-fascist.
Okay, post-fascist.
Wow. And he was sort of the acceptable face of the right. But then they got into this whole... Then she screwed him over because she had, like, some idiot brother who... who somehow...
He gave one of his clubs to them to run, I think.
No, I was referring to the fact they bought like a closet in Monaco, and they thought that he could thereby establish his residence in Monaco, and avoid paying taxes. Do you remember this?
No, I do know that afterwards, Gouge took Elisabetta Tulliani to court to try and recover various pictures. De Chirico was in there, and a lot of other things, and also an Enalotto ticket with which he'd won 2 billion lira, apparently, which is what about. 2 billion lira would have been about...
Back then, it would have been...
About €1 million, 600,000 euro?
£600,000 or £700,000.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of money.
Yeah, and this just goes to show, though, by the way, between this and Tony Bean and the fact that I still think he hasn't served a day in prison...
He's a lucky man.
He really has to be the luckiest guy in the world.
Yeah. Just to go back on George W. Bush, I mean, he also had dinner with the Prime Minister of Japan at the time.
Oh, really?
After signing Nakata.
Oh, okay, right.
And because he was such a success. And again, one of the things that makes you think twice about Gouge, Perugia's kit was made by a company that he owned, which then obviously they made loads of money off the back of Nakata merch. It's just, you know.
Yeah, this is one of the keys that I think, you know how like every time somebody signs like a big footballer will sign for Real Madrid. Like, oh, look, they've sold, you know, 1 million shirts for, you know, £80 each. That means
they've already paid back.
It doesn't work that way because the kit supplier gives you a fixed amount and then they just pay you a royalty generally.
But
in this case, he decided, hey.
What was it? Was it Macron?
No,
Galex.
Galex, that's it.
He said, oh, look, in this case, like, even though I know nothing about making shirts and shirt technology, you know, all the crap with like Adidas and like, oh, look, you know, there's a special wicking in the breathing. No, it's his shirts. I think we're basically like knockoff T-shirts, but he made them. He stuck Nakata's name on the back. And that was basically all pure profit for him. He didn't need a licensing agreement because he owned the company.
You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
So when, basically, the happy system which Serie A had been operating under of 18 teams, with promotion, relegation, etc., finally got broken in the noughties, guess who it was who caused all of that? Luciano Gouge. So his let me get this right. His Catania team in Serie B had been fielding ineligible players. As a result, they end up out of Serie B. So Serie B is composed of the right number of teams. But then Catania Gauci launches for Catania a legal recourse to this, and the Serie B authorities go, well, okay, you can come back in. What we'll do is bring a couple of other more clubs up with you and make it a 22-team league. Yeah. But all the other Serie B owners are going, well, hang on, now we've got extra teams in the division. We don't want this. So they said to them, all right, well, what we'll do is we'll stick more teams in Serie A, and then you have more chance of going up. So now all of a sudden, because of Luciano Gauci fielding ineligible players, Serie A goes from 18 to 20 teams. It's extraordinary.
Win, win, win.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy.
It's good to know that there's no way they'd mess around with the numbers of teams in a division these days. Because, you know, in case you're unaware, Serie B is currently running with 19 teams, but day by day, we're expecting that number to change in season.
20, 21, 22, we don't know.
But one day the luck ran out and they went down and then went bankrupt with a big hole in their accounts of about 100 million euro, I think. And that's when the financial police investigated, and
I mean, they're now back in Serie B
with the manager
Alessandro Nesta.
Extraordinary.
And they got to the playoffs last year and did quite a Gauci thing, is that they sacked the manager and brought in Nesta, hoping that he could actually get them promoted. But no, Nesta, who's been coaching in the NASL,
Miami FC,
they're currently languishing in 15th place. And they've had a North Korean of late as well, rather than a South Korean in Juan.
There's a weird academy that's near Perugia, which
is Stemperini.
It's not 100% clear like who's behind or whatever, but they seem to bring in players from weird parts of the world. I don't know.
So when they brought in this North Korean, who turns out to be good, you know, he scored against Joe Hart playing for Cagliari against Torino. Started last season scoring loads of goals, and this became, I think, the subject of like a parliamentary select committee in...
The fact that a North Korean was...
Well, because where's his wages going? You know, because North Korea were under UN sanctions.
Right.
If he's getting paid, his money's going back to an account in North Korea. Is that money then being used to, you know, further their nuclear...
Absolutely. We should kind of clear up as well that story that we started with, which is probably the most famous Gauci one of all, that he fired Ahn for scoring against Italy and knocking them out of the World Cup. Not technically what happened, because he was just blustering. Ahn was only at Perugia on a season-long contract, which had already ended, and had no particular plans to return there.
But this was vintage Gauci. He'd say stupid publicity-seeking things. I used to have this weird fascination with trashy Italian television back then. So I used to watch, there's a famous show, which I'm sure we talked about different times, called Il Processo di Biscardi, the trial, where this is basically a bunch of people on, like, shouting, creating, like, sort of conspiracy theories. And Gauci was a regular on there. The number of times he would come out and he'd say, okay, I have made an irrevocable decision. Perugia is pulling out of the league as of right now, you know, and they generate headlines for a day. And then, you know, sure enough, the next weekend they were playing. And this is how we operate. He loved that. He loved sort of the attack, the circus, the zoo that was around him all the time. And I'm just fascinated by, A, the fact that he was so lucky with so many things, from the lottery ticket to Tony Bin, to the fact that he just got away with it over and over and over again, to the fact that, like, you know, he sent his kids to prison that he could escape.
Did you interview Jay Bothroyd, Ross Stewart?
I did. I also met Luciano Gauci in his office in Rome, and he was perfectly pleasant. But there was nothing in that meeting that made you think he was... insane. That there was anything beyond that kind of slightly paunchy, raunchy kind of... as I say... Benny Hill-esque rotund figure who was kind of blustering his way through football. But clearly there is more to the man. But yeah, Jay Bothroyd went out there, and I think he had a great start to the season, and things kind of fell away a bit. I think he was perplexed to find himself suddenly in Perugia, but rather enjoyed it. It's a beautiful part of the world in Umbria. And then he came home again.
He's had a very... I think he's in Japan at the moment, Jay Bothroyd.
Yeah. Well, good for him. He was a lovely chap.
Cool.
A lovely chap. Perugia went down. They are back in Serie B now. Mm. They went bankrupt rather than going down. But they are back in Serie B now. And it's, wish them the best with Alessandro Nesta. I don't know what Alessandro and Riccardo, the sons who took the fall for the bankruptcy, what they're up to.
Listening, guys, reach out. We'll have you on the show. Yeah.
But I believe that Gauci is still with, you mentioned he's had kids, with the, you know, the 28-year-old he came back from the Dominican Republic with.
Mm. Presumably she's not 28 anymore.
Well, I would imagine not. All right. Anyway, what an extraordinary career, Luciano Gauci. I doubt we've heard the last of him. Round five of the Serie A season took place last weekend. There were so many delights. Gervinho's 82-metre run. Chiesa's probably 82-metre run to greet his brother after scoring a brilliant third for Fiorentina. Ooh, and Gabriele Chievo losing.
I know. I wanted to stay below zero the whole season.
apart from that, what was your favourite bit of the weekend?
We also had Ronaldo scoring a winner too, other things, and
celebrating with his teammates,
Bernardeschi.
And celebrating other people's goals as well.
Bernardeschi, la mette giù. Bernardeschi, rete. Bernardeschi, la chiude. 2-0 della Juve.
Ronaldo's in the box. Yeah, and you say like, all right, Bernardeschi's going to touch it to him. He was actually open, right?
Yeah.
And then he does it. And still, despite what all the haters say.
Yeah, you would have expected Ronaldo to wheel away with a look of disgust on his face.
No, he goes off and he celebrates and he seems genuinely happy and, you know.
How long will it last? I don't know.
Haters going to hate, James. Simple as.
But it's nice to see. Now, Juve are in action this evening.
They're playing Bologna.
Oh, that's right, Bologna.
Pippo Inzaghi's got their first goals and first win of the season against Roma.
Former Juve legend Pippo Inzaghi, who's taking on the old lady tonight. We can't really talk too much about this game because they haven't happened yet.
We can talk about their next game.
We can talk about their next game, which
against
is
against Napoli.
Oh my word! So, you know, depending on what happens this evening, that's first against second.
Napoli can go top.
Yeah, because they're 3 points behind.
With a comprehensive victory.
They were in Turin last weekend as well, weren't they, Napoli? And that went pretty well.
Yeah, and things beginning to come together for Carlo, who's doing some quite interesting things with this team.
So 3-1 their victory at Torino, with two goals from Insigne.
Best start to the season ever. New kind of role, playing as a sort of second striker.
Right.
More central position, not asked to do kind of same sort of defensive shift that he has done in the past. So he
keeps fiddling with his team, which is so like, we thought like, oh, this is going to be Zielinski's season, and then like he benches him at the weekend. He plays Marco Rog, who I think had started a game in
April 2017.
Something absurd like that.
Luperto as
and
well.
It works, yeah. This guy Luperto, nobody knows who he is. Yeah. Like, you know.
Maximovic, who looked to be a complete bust under Sarri, they paid a fortune for him from Torino, sent him out on loan to Spartak Moscow. He ends up in the team. I mean, he's using everyone.
All right, and what do you think of their prospects at the Allianz Stadium then at the weekend?
I still think Napoli are a little bit too open to be competitive in this game. I think, yeah, obviously it holds some very good memories from their last visit here with that late win, first one at the Allianz Stadium. It is a new look, Napoli, in that they're no longer wedded to the same system. There's more variation, I suppose, in their play.
I find Napoli so difficult to read because that first half hour against Torino was brilliant. And it was with a team that I would have never imagined. It's hard to predict because you don't know what pieces he's going to put in there. I mean, I thought with the 4-4-2, I thought this is where we see the beginning of the end of Marek Hamšík because he's not going to be in a two-man midfield. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something totally different. If we see Milik back in there, if we see him actually attacking Juve and trusting Koulibaly. That's the thing about Ancelotti, is, and we've said this many times, but, you know, behind sort of the jovial man manager is also a guy who's really comfortable playing a lot of systems, who's not afraid to borrow from those who came before him, whether it's Sarri or at Bayern Pep, and you can debate whether he did it enough in Bayern. I think Juve might also not be looking past them, but, you know, having also Europe on the back of their minds and, I don't know. I could see Napoli nicking it or getting a draw.
Well, it's Saturday evening, that game taking place. The other big game of the weekend also on Saturday, and it's in Rome as Roma take on Lazio. Roma, who were beaten, as you mentioned, James, by Pippo Inzaghi's Bologna last weekend, now facing Simone Inzaghi's Lazio. Ooh.
Yeah. We won't know what Roma have done against Frosinone in the meantime. Mm. But
another derby.
That's
true, yeah.
Yeah, but the players have been in sort of ritiro since Sunday's game against Bologna. Yeah. So they've
welcome to 1981.
Followed on the heels of their dismal performance away at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, when they lost 3-0 and their goalkeeper was still the best player. Yeah, I mean,
which is the positive note of all that. You know, we didn't maybe pick up on that too much, but Olsen, that was his best game yet for Roma.
Yeah, and the weekend before against Gab's favourite team, Chievo, when Roma were 2-0 up after the first half, they then get pegged back to 2-2. Olsen makes an incredible save, stoppage time, to stop them losing again. Roma haven't won since the opening day against Torino. They won that game because Edin Dzeko scores a Van Basten kind of volley. I mean, the brief from the club is that everyone's at fault here apart from the manager, or he's third in the list behind the players, behind Monchi, and then it's Di Francesco. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's been too much. People have focused on the fact that they signed 11 or 12 new players. There's not continuity with what they achieved last year. The only players who've really started every game of the new bunch is Olsen. Pastore did before he got injured. Mm. And I think Pastore caused some confusion because he played three different positions, different systems. Doesn't obviously fit in with what Di Francesco wants to do, because there's not a kind of 10, there's not a number 10 position in that 4-3-3 that he's kind of quite rigidly stuck to. But I think when you take out the most influential non-Roman players in that team, in Strootman and Nainggolan, I think there is a bit of an issue there. You're putting a lot of faith in two very promising but young guys in Pellegrini and Cristante in midfield. And Roma, as always, they, A, struggle at home. We saw that last season. They lost six games. And goals still don't come easy for this team.
Roma to win then, the derby, you think? If they don't, where does that leave Di Francesco, the manager?
I think we saw with Garcia, for example, Palotta was quite patient with Garcia. He gave him a chance to turn it around. I think he came out later and said he was maybe a little bit too patient with him. But I think it's still quite early in the season. I don't look around and see any viable alternatives who are better than Di Francesco.
That they can afford.
I don't think they could get Zidane. I think Conte. Conte's got his issues with Chelsea still, I think, which would make that difficult. Exactly. So, you know, I think that's complicated. And Monchi's kind of tentatively tied his future to that of Di Francesco, saying that, you know, if he goes, then I go as well. So, yeah, it's a bit of a mess, really.
I'm not so down. I think these are good players. I think it's a question of finding the right mix. And I think,
but it's the difference to how they finished last season is so stark, though. In terms of,
but you know, I think
the enthusiasm's gone.
Yeah, the you know.
Yeah, but the enthusiasm comes from what they did against Barcelona in what was absolutely tremendous, but also one of the dumbest coaching performances I saw in a long time from Valverde.
Yeah.
Arguably superseded the week after when Roma played Liverpool and played that insane high line.
Well, yeah, but possibly when they went to Bernabeu and chose that as an occasion to blood a player who never featured in a top-level match before.
Yeah, I have less of a problem.
To send a message as well. That was the other thing. He's like, yes, Zaniolo is a talented player. He deserves his shot. But this is a message, too, about players not showing the same application, intensity in training.
Right.
Players who really disappoint me are the veterans who were there last year who did quite well. Kolarov, for example, who's so important for that team. He's essentially a playmaker playing as a left-back. You've got Fazio, who hasn't had a good start to the season. Those guys who were Mr. Reliable last year have, maybe it's because in Kolarov's case, the World Cup and blah, 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 and he's a year older and he's not young. And Dzeko, you know, Dzeko's just always whining on the pitch. You know, I think his body language is pretty terrible sometimes. You know, it's just like, oh,
I'd agree with that. I think there has been a letdown there, and I think that's more of an issue than the holdovers. I don't know what's up with Pellegrini, but he's got to play a lot better. It's also worth noting about Roma is that if it hadn't been for that run last year, I don't think we would have had this massive excitement and even this idea that, oh, but look, they lost Alisson, Nainggolan, and Strootman. Well, you know, Alisson, fine. If he doesn't make those saves against Atletico, they go out in the group stage and we don't even have this conversation. And then there's no Barcelona and none of that ever happens. But, you know, he's still a goalkeeper. So he offers you kind of money. You got to take it. Nainggolan.
Bad season last year.
Not a good season. You remember all the time about, like, you know, he was saying, like, oh, I should be playing closer to Dzeko, further away from Dzeko, all that.
He almost went to China in January.
Yeah.
And he's partying at New Year.
Yeah.
And Strootman, while I love Strootman, and he's a great guy and super popular, poor guy's not been Strootman since the injury. And he wasn't Strootman last season either. Mm. I mean, we can go and tie ourselves into knots, but, you know, it's not like Strootman carried that team on his ample back. You know.
I mean, fans hate this argument. There's less chance for the club to make decent money off both of them, no? because they're late 20s, early 30s. And I completely see where Gab's coming from on Nainggolan, because I think Nainggolan, it was clear that there was a clash there between, he didn't really seem to fit in Di Francesco's system.
4-2-3 is not for him.
The other thing, I understand they did it, there was an opportunity to sign him, and his talent at that stage justified it, but Schick
has been a real letdown.
You potentially tie up as much as 42 million in him. I mean, that looks like a bust. They have to find a way, and I think Di Francesco is trying to find a solution, but that is just not working. Every opportunity he gets, he doesn't take it.
They do have, I mean, that deal is one of the most complicated deals ever put. It's a form of sort of leveraged financing that I think they do have several outs, in the sense that if he's just terrible or he gets injured again, they get most of their money back, don't they?
Mm. A lot of it's incentive-based.
A lot of it is incentive-based, and him hitting certain targets and being sold for certain amounts. But the fact that Schick hasn't really contributed, that's an issue.
Big game coming up this weekend. Boy, did Roma need a win. Lazio in fine form defeating Genoa 4-1 last weekend. We'll be back next week with Golazzo to discuss what happens in those games and some other stuff besides. For now, many, many thanks to Gabriele Marcotti and James Horncastle. From all of us here, to arrivederci. Campionato
di calcio italiano. You've been listening to Galazzo, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and make sure you check out our other podcasts this season. The Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.